High school parents have made football a part of their Friday nights as long as anyone can remember, but in recent years, participation in the sport has dropped noticeably. Concerns about player safety and socioeconomic factors raise worries about the sport's long-term prospects, especially in communities with deep football traditions and culture. GLT's Eric Stock examines the future of high school football, efforts to make the game safer, and how schools and communities are adjusting.
As you drive into the small farming community of Lexington, you quickly get a sense for the town's pride in its school and its sports teams. A large sign off the main road trumpets its athletic achievements, 15 state championships in high school and junior high sports. On a cold, windy, and rainy night in September, fans from all over northern McLean County, including rival El Paso Gridley, make their way to Lexington High School to take part in a Friday night ritual that's as much religion as it is sport in much of America.
Welcome, everyone, to Lexington for the home opener for the Lexington Ridgeview Mustangs.
It's a special night in Lexington because the football game their team is about to play is the only game Lexington will host all season. That's because Lexington no longer has a team of its own. 6 years after the Minutemen played in the state championship game, and 4 years after its star quarterback Alex Tanney was drafted into the National Football League, the school, which boasted 5 state title game appearances, no longer had enough players to field its own team. Eager to hold on to the sport, Lexington agreed to co-op arrangements with the 2 consolidated school districts, Ridgeview and Blue Ridge, so students who want to play football ride the bus an additional 40 minutes each day just to practice, just to have a football team. The 3-school co-op lasted just 1 season. Coach Jay Kennedy took over the program in 2016 after 3 straight winless seasons at Ridgeview, where he served as an assistant. The job was open for 3 months and no one applied before the athletic director applied some pressure on him to take the job.
Rodney had actually said, you know, Jake, if you take the head coach, I'll be the offense coordinator. I said, okay, I'll work with you, Coach Keller. Coached together for 12 years now. Well, I took the head job, and he backed out as the offense coordinator.
Ridgeview has since dropped Blue Ridge from the co-op because it became too cumbersome, but Kennedy has actually increased numbers in the football program. Ridgeview started the season with 53 players in all high school levels, with 16 of them from Lexington.
The cliche is, oh, if you win, kids will come out. Well, that's not always true because, you know, we've only been 3-6. I think if you get the right kids to come out, they'll bring other kids with them. And then there's a vibe, and then there's energy in your schools about, hey, football's good to go. Like, you should play it, and cool kids are playing football.
Kennedy adds he still has to allay concerns from parents who are worried about their child suffering a concussion.
But that could happen in basketball. It could happen in soccer. You can take a fastball to the head in baseball. You're going to get concussed. I mean, if it happens, it happens. It's no different than a broken ankle or a broken leg doing any other sport. But it is a tough sell right now in football. That's kind of the elephant in the room.
While the co-op between former rivals has kept football alive in both communities, to some it has still diminished the community's sense of identity.
The fence mending, it's been good. And it's like anything. You're going to have your established people that they don't want to see change. But you hope that as you sell it and kids are more taking part of it and the communities come together, that will go away. But it will never 100% be gone.
Jamie Farrell is president of the Lexington Booster Club and was a cheerleader during her days at the high school. Her son played in the last Lexington football team as a freshman in 2014, but decided not to return after the co-op was formed.
Getting used to it, getting used to the new normal, getting used to the fact that Lexington doesn't have a football team, it's a challenge. So, you know, it's just tough right now, you know, but hopefully people are going to start to buy into it a little bit more.
As Farrell helped set up food and drinks at the concession stand prior to kickoff, Farrell said she longs for the day that fans will see the Ridgeview Lexington Mustangs as their own.
People just aren't coming out like they used to and stuff. So I hope that we can, you know, kind of bring it back and people get a little bit more used to it, more comfortable with it.
The transition may be easier for some families who are less invested in the community's past. Polly Walcott grew up in Peoria before moving to Lexington in 2000 to raise her children. Her son Tate plays in the football team and is a state champion long jumper. She admits it was easier for her to see the practical benefits of the co-op because she lacked the strong connection many in the community had with Lexington's high school. Still, she and her family wondered if it was time to explore other options, as the school's enrollment continued to dwindle and athletic opportunities were jeopardized.
So there was a time when they were talking about us consolidating with whoever and years ago, and we thought, do we need to move? Do we want to try to find a new town to go to? And no, we wanted to stay here. We like Lexington.
Son Tate Walcott quit football after his freshman year to his mother's relief. When friends talked him into rejoining the team for his senior season, she worried he would get hurt and risk his scholarship potential as a track standout.
Oh, yeah. I have some hesitation now. I mean, it's constant prayers that he won't get hurt. I enjoy watching him play, but, you know, there's some concern.
While hopes are much higher this season at Ridgeview, the Mustangs were assured of at least one win. Their first opponent, Rockford Our Lady of the Sacred Heart Academy, had to forfeit its entire season because the tiny school of 20 students doesn't have enough to field a football team. More school districts like Lexington and Ridgeview are forming cooperatives as a way to have enough student-athletes to field a team, but even co-ops aren't enough in some places. Flanagan's high school football program pulls in students from three school districts. Yet in a game in early October, the Falcons had to quit at halftime because they didn't have enough players after several got injured and several others had recently quit the team. The National Federation of State High School Associations reports football participation has dropped 17% in Illinois over the last 5 years, and there are 18 fewer high schools sponsoring football. Many schools in Illinois are dealing with enrollment issues on a broader scale. Illinois has an out-migration problem, one of the worst in the country, and many rural school districts are bearing the brunt of that exodus, whether they are moving out of state or just into a larger city. And while McLean County's population has marginally grown since the 2010 census, many rural school districts are shrinking. Six of the eight public school districts based in McLean County have seen decreased enrollment in the last 15 years. Even after they absorbed students from two school districts that no longer exist, Shenoah was annexed into the Prairie Central School District in 2004. Gridley merged with El Paso that same year. Rural schools have seen the largest drops in K-12 enrollment since 2002. Olympia's headcount down nearly 26%. Lexington has fallen 19%, and Ridgeview's enrollment down 15%. It's been said that if the mothers of America wanted, they could kill football on their own, simply by taking their children off the field or never letting them on it in the first place. It appears a growing number of parents aren't letting their children play what is still the most popular spectator sport in the U.S. Chris Peacock of Lexington grew up in the classic American football family. She and her dad spent every fall Sunday watching their beloved Chicago Bears.
Mike Ditka, hungry Chicago. Finally, champions.
Her brother quarterbacked the Lexington High School team into the state playoffs in the early 90s. But over the last decade, her sentiments toward the game she once loved changed as she read more reports about ex-players suffering from brain injuries.
The stories of some, you know, juniors say, there's been some college kids who've had difficulties with mental illness and committing suicide and from the CTE, and it just kind of ruins the fun after a while.
Sayal was an NFL Hall of Fame linebacker who committed suicide in 2012. Doctors determined Sayal suffered from chronic brain damage. Chris and her husband, Paul, came to the decision they wouldn't let any of their four kids play football. She says it was a difficult conversation telling their oldest son, Ben, a multi-sport athlete, that he wouldn't play.
He really did want to play football. He really wanted to be a running back and play. And it was a hard discussion, but we just had to be the parents, and we just had to say no. It wasn't going to be his decision.
Peacock says her son found joy in soccer, track, and basketball without as many health risks.
No regrets at all. He's great at soccer. He's great at basketball. I think he's getting a lot of fulfillment from those sports. And I think, you know, there's always going to be risks, but I think the risks are lower in those sports.
As for their younger boys working their way through grade school, even flag football won't be an option for them.
I totally would support flag football, except I feel like that's a gateway to real football, so we've been steering them away from that.
Flag football, by design, is a gateway to tackle football. Most young people who start playing the non-tackle version end up playing tackle football later. If youth football is the foundation on which the sport is built, the game is still on solid ground in Bloomington Normal, which has had a thriving program for decades. Children and their parents can easily be drawn to the Friday Night Lights atmosphere. At Ewing Park 2, where the Bloomington Cardinals play their home games, helmet-clad kids ages 8 to 13, decked out in full shoulder pads, engage in their ritualistic pep talks, mimicking the ones they see on television, then storm onto the field by tearing through a sign amid thick, fake red smoke and AC/DC pumping in the background. And cheerleaders capturing the attention of cheering fans who camp under tents lining the field in all directions. At White Oak Park, where the Bloomington Knockers play their home games, an inflated helmet is their prop of choice as players enter the field. Knockers director Brian Segabiano is the third generation in his family that has helped keep the Knockers in business for more than 60 years. He says it's all part of the game and fan experience that has helped keep youth football so popular, even as more parents express worries about their children's safety. Segabiano says he wants to take a proactive approach.
You address it. You don't bury your head in the sand. You say, okay, there's a concern. What are the things that they have some valid points about? And you address it because it's an important sport to us. It's taught a lot of us a lot of lessons outside of the field.
Segabiano says youth football in Bloomington Normal has banned kickoffs, a play considered one of the most dangerous in the game because of the risk for full-speed collisions. He adds that coaches are teaching safer tackling techniques, specifically avoiding helmet contact when possible. Lyle Edwards and his wife Diane have been running the Bloomington Cardinals youth football program for decades. He believes the game is safer than it's ever been, but doesn't believe better helmets are the answer.
I don't care what kind of helmet you buy. Helmets are only designed for incidental contact. They're not designed to use as a battering ram. The two things happen. You can get a concussion that way, or you can get a neck injury.
Edwards says in the 1970s and 80s, neck injuries were far more common because players often led with their head. Diane Edwards jokes she's the Cardinals' co-director by marriage. She says the kids in the program all submit to baseline concussion tests that include a neurocognitive assessment that's used to determine whether a child is safe to return to play after a potential head injury.
We also offer our kids impact testing every year. The Cardinals pay for that because we think it's that important.
Lyle Edwards suggests much of the fear over football is simply a fear of the unknown, which he likened to the public's misunderstanding about guns.
All the younger people don't own guns. All the younger people are concerned about the health of their kids. The older people are when we all die out and understand if you teach somebody how to use a gun right, it's safe. If you teach somebody how to play football right, it's safer. It's not safe. Nothing is safe.
Edwards laments ongoing efforts to change football will eventually lead to a game either changing beyond recognition or going away altogether.
I think someday it'll be gone. I don't think I'll see it.
But he says that would be a shame.
What do you want them to do if you don't have youth sports? You want to set them in front of a TV and play video games? That's not good. You want them just running around the neighborhood, out in front of cars.
When coaches or school administrators in McLean County have medical concerns about concussions, they call Edward Pegg III. Dr. Pegg is a Bloomington-based neurologist at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center and runs a private practice. Pegg says he first became interested in studying links between football and head injuries when his son played at Normal West High School.
I actually witnessed Ed having a concussion on the field. He wasn't knocked out, but when I saw him walking towards the goalpost rather than back to the huddle, I knew, you know, something was going on.
Pegg has been providing concussion baseline tests for youth, high school, and college football players in Bloomington, Normal, and beyond for years. His son, Dr. Edward Pegg IV, followed in his father's footsteps into neurology And in 2015, he presented research to the American Academy of Neurology. He studied brain scans of retired NFL players and neuropsychiatric evaluations of retirees who had suffered repeated concussions to detect changes in their brain's health. Peg the Fourth says the MRIs revealed changes in brain activity likely resulted from multiple head injuries.
Having repeated head trauma over a period of years is probably not good in the long term.
The senior Peg is a season ticket holder for Illinois State football, but says he's not a hardcore fan. He acknowledges the health risks that football can pose, but he believes the constant drumbeat from the media about concussions has caused the pendulum to swing too far in the other direction.
You know, if we've got a lot of henny pennies out there, you know, freaking out about every little thing that happens, it may not swing back to the middle.
Peg believes most pro football players have likely suffered anywhere from 20 to 50 undiagnosed concussions in their careers, a number that someone playing only high school or college will likely never reach.
You hear all the bad things and nobody has gone, now look, these are 300 plus pound players that are slamming into each other at over 15 miles an hour. I mean, that's a lot more of, you know, causes the brain to slosh around a lot more.
The senior Peg acknowledges he'd prefer to see kids waiting until they're older to play football. That's a decision the younger Peg will soon face. He has three young children now all playing soccer, and Peg says he hopes they stay with soccer. If his 7-year-old son decides he wants to play football,
I think I would be okay with that. I think that, you know, if he was showing that he was having repetitive injuries, then I'd be like, well, we got to rethink this. But to play, you know, in high school is one thing. To do it as a lifelong career, I would be a little bit more hesitant to, you know, encourage that.
While the effects football has on the brain may never be fully known, perceptions about the sport's dangers have the attention of the Illinois High School Association, the privately run organization which oversees high school sports in the state. Craig Anderson is its executive director. His devotion to football runs deep. He played in the sport from sixth grade through college. He later coached football at the high school level and coached his own kids in youth football. Anderson believes caretakers of the game have made great strides to make it safer.
I can honestly sit here and say I think the game's the safest it's ever been in terms of equipment and technique and the things that our coaches are doing to protect kids.
The IHSA has also limited full contact drills during practices. Anderson acknowledges concerns about players' safety are likely the driving force in reducing participation in football, but he suggests increased specialization of younger athletes has prompted more of them to focus on one sport year-round in hopes of earning a college scholarship.
When there's money being invested, then there's somebody making money out of it. So, you know, those trainers are promoting those kids to come and participate in these out of our high school season leagues and development plans or programs that, you know, kids might find their ways to get better, but, you know, they're losing out on opportunities to participate for their high school.
Few football coaches are more familiar with the challenges facing high schools than Mike Castleman. He coached Lexington's last football team and is now the athletic director at Olympia High School, yet another rural district with a shrinking population. He says he has seen high school football suffer from many student-athletes only wanting to play one sport with the thought it would make them more successful. Castleman considers that flawed thinking. He says spending too much time on one sport is often counterproductive to becoming a complete athlete.
Ohio State a couple years ago had a thing where it was 90 to 95% of their squad were all multi-sport athletes in high school. It's what the next level is looking for, but for some reason we're not getting on board with that.
The increased specialization of youth in high school sports has increased injury risks, according to Cynthia LaBella, professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. She spoke to IPR's The 21st.
There are a few studies that suggest that, especially with sports that require repetition of one specific movement over and over again to perfect a skill. So there is some concern that overuse injuries are becoming more prevalent because there is not as much downtime for the body to repair tissues and recover. and heal.
The increased likelihood of injuries can lead to an increased likelihood of litigation. Hundreds, if not thousands, of lawsuits have been filed against university athletic programs claiming schools lack proper concussion protocols. Joe Walters is in his first season as head coach at Central Catholic High School in Bloomington. Walters cautioned that a legal challenge of some kind could accelerate more drastic changes to the game.
You know, it could happen overnight if there was some type of significant change and we weren't able to obtain insurance anymore. Otherwise, I do think it will slowly. And I think that's our responsibility as adults and coaches that we got to protect our players and our children. So if we're not doing that, well, then shame on us.
The IHSA requires any athletes showing signs of a possible concussion to be taken off the field until a school-approved healthcare provider deems them safe to return to play. A growing number of schools are turning to 8-man football as a viable alternative to the 11-player game. A majority of states offer a scaled-down version of the game. Some offer 6-on-6, others 9-on-9. Illinois currently has 6 schools sponsoring 8-man football. Many are in border communities, as teams often have to travel out of state to Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa to find opponents. Anderson believes 8-man football could have a future in Illinois, but added it would likely take at least 30 participating schools before the IHSA would officially recognize it as a championship sport.
We're going to monitor the growth of 8-man football, and when it seems like the participation numbers for teams make sense for our board to consider a state series in 8-man football, we'll probably will.
Mike Castleman says Olympia's football program is starting to rebound. In a new co-op with Delavan, the Spartans recently picked up their first victory since 2015. But he acknowledged the uphill battle his program and the sport faces long term. Aside from the threat of injuries, Castleman worries some young people are turned off playing football simply because of the commitment that's required.
I don't want to offend anybody with anything, but you know, football is it's hard. It just is. The preparation is hard. It's a hard game to play. And some people, you know, for the choices that they have, just are not willing to do that.
Castleman adds those sacrifices he made playing football in high school and college were well worth it.
When I talk with guys from high school, I don't mean to offend the math teachers, but we don't talk about what happened in math class. We talked about football, you know, and we still do these many years later.
But athletic administrators know there is one math problem they will have to solve. If current participation declines in football continue in 30 years, sounds like this might become sounds of the past. I'm Eric Stahl.
High school football enrollment in Illinois has dropped 17% in the last 3 years.